Radio. Danny, how you doing this week?
I am splendid. How are you doing, Mr. Nestico?
I mean, it's After All Radio, so clearly I'm doing exceedingly well.
Better than you, that's right.
Exceedingly. Welcome, everybody. We're glad to have you here with us again. Another week, another After All Radio, another excellent WWE Monday Night Raw. Good NXT this week. Lots of ramp building up to our the big draft coming up on July 19th. This is, woo,
it's
good time to be a wrestling fan.
That it is, absolutely is. This whole time is going to be phenomenal.
I'm excited, everybody, just so you're clear. But Fanatics, I got to ask you a quick question, because we are sponsored by AT&T. I got to ask you, what's better than having one of those stunning Samsung Galaxy S7s? Having two, of course. Right now, if you buy a Samsung Galaxy S7 on the AT&T Next, you get one for free. That's right, for free. Visit the link on our website or your local store before this offer expires on June 30th. AT&T, rethink possible. I mean, I'm ready to rethink to AT&T because I have Sprint, and as I joke about every week, as I call it the Not Now Network, I was in Orlando last week, and it was like I didn't have a phone. It was as if I was like I brought like a really expensive calculator with me on my trip.
Nice.
It sucks. The Sprint network is not cool. If you are one of our listeners and you work for Sprint, or you are a customer who partakes in Sprint, maybe, you know, I'm just saying, maybe tell me what to do to make my phone actually not be a calculator and instead be a phone, because right now I'm getting ready to rethink possible.
That's good. We want you to rethink possible.
I'm just saying.
I would assume that our sponsors would like if we rethought possible as well. I am an AT&T customer, by the way.
Because you actually know what it's – well, you live out in the boonies. You have to have every – advantage when it comes to technology that you possibly can.
This is true as well.
You don't have a choice. It's either you rethink possible or you rethink where you live.
it's a little more cost effective to rethink possible.
Yeah, I guess I'll stick with AT&T because it's either that or you have to use a landline. And this is 2016. This isn't 1996. We don't use those conveniences like landlines. Answering machines. What are those?
Remember when caller ID was like a huge thing? Like, what is this?
Jesus. And you'd see, and it was that girl from like middle school, and you'd be like, oh my God, she's calling me right now. Can't answer. Wrestling's on. Too busy watching the Rock and Sock Connection to make a connection of my own.
Ah, wonderful memories.
Yeah, man, we were losers.
Feels yeah, good. We're pretty cool now. I'd say we're doing all right for ourselves.
Oh yeah, we're cool now. I Facebook is a portal into self esteem. You know, for those of you that don't know, Danny and I graduated in 2004. We graduated from a class that at the time was, I think it was like the largest or second largest in Florida State history. It was like they had to rent out an arena for us to graduate, and it took hours and hours and hours and hours for us to graduate. Because it was like there was just so many kids there. I can't even remember, Danny, how many kids there were. There was like 700 or something like that.
That was just our senior class. It was like 700, 800 kids. Just
miserable.
A senior class from one school.
It was
in
awful.
Little old Naples, Florida. Crazy.
And I was in the top of the class. So like they did us first. So then we had to wait for then everybody else to go. So it was like, you're there, you're done in the first like 20 minutes, and then you have like a solid 3.5 hours. But like Facebook is just the greatest thing ever, because not only do I get to follow all these awesome wrestling pages and connect with fans all over the world, or, you know, work with Danny on Midcard All-Stars and have the little Facebook page there, but you also
cheap
get
plug,
to see all
plug.
The people that you went to high school with. Yeah, cheap plug. You also get to see all the people you went to high school with, and like just how bad their lives are, and like how everybody that like gave you guff back then, and that was mean to you and rude to you, and like, oh, I'm so cool. I'm in high school. My dad owns, you know, a dealership. I have a truck, you know, and to see that they like they work at a like a car wash now, and like they can't even afford to buy bread. That's why they really invented Facebook. That's why Zuckerberg invented Facebook. It was to see how much better he was doing than everybody else.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I mean, I probably made fun of somebody on accident. I don't know if I was talking about somebody in particular, but there's a good chance that I might have accidentally in a class of 800 people.
Yeah.
Talk about
never, let's do it. This is After All Radio, for crying out loud.
This
is why you guys love us.
Midcard All Stars, not Midlife Crisis Radio.
Oh, Jesus. We're not quite there yet.
We just turned 30. It's no big deal. We don't need to kill ourselves yet. So let's talk about some of the bigger things that are coming up. Since we've gone to 90 minutes, I sort of like leading in with NXT, because I think NXT, obviously, future of wrestling, future of the business. Triple H putting in an exorbitant amount of time into this product, which at NXT The End, his statement, very, very true, that they are no longer developmental, which we used to say as just a term of compliment. I didn't feel like they were developmental a year and a half ago when they were putting on 5-star matches with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura arriving. I just felt like developmental was a good term for them, but it wasn't true. They were putting on world-class product. So NXT this week, excellent show. The return of Bayley, Ty Dillinger, getting himself in a match with Oney Larkin, which was kind of cool, because Oney Larkin is somebody that you thought was a Dramoke, and he comes out and gets a big win over Ty Dillinger, who's somebody that, you know, a lot of people are talking about as a potential star to come out of NXT. And you get Austin Aries doing the old Oklahoma Shuffle with No Way Jose, and then just turning on him and putting him down with the Last Chancery. This was a excellent show. It didn't have the incredible wrestling that we're used to on these, but it is becoming more of a product. So it's promoting storylines now. It's putting on these shows that are going to bolster the profile of eventual monthly pay-per-views. Well, I guess we don't even call them that anymore, specials. But we're in a good spot with NXT now. But what I specifically want to talk about with you today is, what do you think in terms of the draft? Now, we're hearing about possible rating of the NXT locker room, about the talents we're going to bring up. Who are you thinking is going to be coming up through the ranks of NXT and bolstering the SmackDown and Raw rosters?
Where do you start realistically? You have your big names. Now, I guess it also is interesting, because do they bring all the big names? Do your Samoa Joes and your Austin Aries, do they come up, or do they keep them there? Not in a negative sense, but do they keep them in NXT? Because I mean, that's, you know, you can't take every single thing away from NXT. Granted, they still have a great roster, but you don't have all the names. Because at the end of the day, names are what put butts in seats. You know what I mean?
Right.
Especially to the average fan. Now, I know the NXT arena most of those are pretty much the same people there for every show, which is great. So they may be able to get away with that, but I really think that they need to keep some of the bigger names down there. do they bring Bailey up right away?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that they missed her window of opportunity. I think they could have brought her up right after WrestleMania. Because now I feel that if they bring her up, it's kind of... The women's division is totally a shambles right now again. So if they bring her up, like what exactly do you do with her? Because Charlotte and Sasha still need to feud. Becky's got her feud with everybody else. So there's so many different things that are happening right now that it feels to me like for her, her window of opportunity is gone. Finn Balor is going to be up here soon at any given time. I mean, there's so many different ways for them to play, and they're going to have to call up a lot of guys. Either that, or they're calling in a lot of older guys to come up and fill in these roster spots. Who knows?
Well, they're saying the number that you need to sort of create equilibrium is bringing up around 12 to 14 names. Whether that's bringing in the older names, like we've heard Tajiri, is somebody who they were discussing bringing back. He was a very popular superstar in the early to mid 2000s, had a nice run with ECW before they were bought, and very popular, the Japanese Buzzsaw. He'll actually, I believe he's competing in the Cruiserweight Classic. So we're bringing in all sorts of excellent, yeah, him and Brian Kendrick, I believe, are two of the names from WWE past that will be coming up. It looks like Kurt Angle is not going to be coming back. A lot of people thought he was going to be. There was rumblings. He had mentioned that Triple H actually contacted him, and they had spoken, which sort of, you know, they always say the door never closes. And years ago, you can remember whenever Kurt Angle left in 2006, the saying was, he'll never be back. WWE will never invite him back. That's the end of it. The Angle era in WWE is over, but much like I think with guys like CM Punk, if they ever did express extreme interest in returning, WWE would welcome them back. They put dollar signs above personal vendettas, even though you look at how long it took them to put the Macho Man into the Hall of Fame. We can see that Kurt Angle certainly has the interest in coming back, but he would have to be on the Brock Lesnar schedule or the Triple H schedule, the used sparingly schedule. And does that translate for Kurt Angle? Does he have that kind of draw? Is he the kind of guy like that can wrestle like a Triple H or a Brock Lesnar? And people are going to say, oh, that's a must-see match. I have to watch Kurt Angle wrestle. And I don't, as much as Kurt Angle belongs in the Hall of Fame in a few years, or as outrageous as his matches were during his prime in WWE, which they were, make no mistake about it, in his short time, Kurt Angle was probably, I would dare say, one of the top five, maybe even top three best wrestlers in the world for somebody who picked it up, you know, a few years after winning a gold medal in the United States, you know, for the United States in the Olympics. So does Kurt Angle have that kind of drawing power where at the end of the day, he can headline a pay-per-view, he wrestles three or four times a year, and you could say, oh my God, I have to buy this pay-per-view. I have to subscribe to the network. Kurt Angle is going to be going one-on-one with, you know, Dean Ambrose or Roman Reigns. And I don't think that he has that. And it's bad for him because while he went on to do some great things over in TNA, they were in TNA. They weren't in WWE. So you look at AJ Styles and you say, look at what he did over in TNA, his marquee, his draw. That's amazing. If you're the top guy in TNA, that is certainly something that should be, you know, I guess it should be celebrated. I'm trying to think of a word that doesn't sound too demeaning because there are some great guys there. When Christian was there, Austin Aries, a whole litany of excellent competitors. But at the end of the day, WWE is the ocean and TNA is a bucket of water. That's just a global phenomenon in comparison to a promotion that is on a pay-only network, Pop TV. It doesn't compare at all. So I feel like the issue for Kurt Angle is not going to be, will he return to WWE? It's, if he could return to WWE, is it going to mean anything? You know, the fans chant, we want Angle sometimes, that when the rumors flare up and people say, hey, he might be really coming back this time. But yet we are, and if his drawing power was that substantial, it leads me to believe WWE would have already brought him back. Unless they're really pulling the wool over our eyes and he'll be back for SmackDown.
And I really do agree with that. I mean, on the onset, you think about Kurt, and you're like, yeah, Kurt Angle, as you said, he's one of the, at one point was probably one of the top three wrestlers in the entire world. And that's, and it's not same to reiterate you, it's not in a sense to demean him by any stretch, but he's been gone from regularly scheduled programming and for such a long time, and they never really highlight him at all on TV either. You know what I mean? Like, you see these Attitude Era skits and stuff all the time, but you never really see anything with Kurt Angle, which is strange.
They show the during Shane McMahon's return, they were showing him getting belly to back through the glass a couple times. But that's really, you know, they mentioned him tonight. Kurt Angle was sort of the beginning of the Ruthless Aggression era, along with John Cena. So they did give him a mention tonight. So I'm sure that's more than enough to get the internet ablaze of, is this it? Is Kurt Angle going to come back? But I just don't see it. And if they're pulling the wool over my eyes and Kurt, hey, keep it quiet, we're bringing you back, but just tell everybody that we're not, go on record, say you'll be back maybe in the next year, something like that. Kudos to WWE. In the age of the internet, if you can surprise me, then you've done your job. I'm thankful for your dedication to making sure that I am shocked. Like when AJ Styles arrived at Royal Rumble, and we kind of knew AJ Styles had signed, but we didn't know if he was going to be there for Rumble. The talk was he would be there, you know, post-Mania, maybe even, you know, pre, but in some small capacity. It was, you know, maybe the Intercontinental in the ladder match. But no, he arrived then, and it was a shock to all of us. The entire audience died, erupted, and was resurrected because we were so shocked that he had been there. But in terms of who they're going to bring up from NXT, I think three divas stand out to me very, very distinctly. I see Nia Jax with an obscenely bright future. I see Carmella. She adds an excellent dimension to the divas division. She's a great worker. She has an outrageous look. Cass and Enzo are already over. So by proxy, she comes in and she's over as well. And my wild card is not actually Bayley. It's I would love to see Alexa Bliss come up. I think she has that excellent look. She is great in the ring, a little bit injury prone. She's taken a few, you know, breaks to the face. But her mic work is, I think, where she excels to a point where she overruns every diva on the roster with her ability to speak. And a good example of that was on NXT this week when Carmella was discussing becoming the NXT champion. Alexa Bliss came and interrupted, cut a very nice heel promo. And, you know, I remember I tweeted her once and she retweeted. It was real cute. But I said, like, when did this happen? Like, when did Alexa Bliss become the best speaking diva in NXT? When did her, like, mic ability surpass everybody by miles? And I feel like that is, to me, a huge selling point. I think Bayley is an obvious inclusion. My instinct tells me that at Battleground, you will see the end of a lot of feuds because you will then a great deal of superstars shifted around. You might not see Natalya and Becky Lynch on the same program, therefore they can't feud anymore. Same thing with Sasha Banks and Charlotte. You might see Charlotte on Raw. You might see Sasha Banks on SmackDown, and that's it. We don't get to see them feud anymore. So I think bringing Bayley up can happen very organically. If Charlotte is victorious at Battleground, you could see that night Bayley emerging on Raw and saying, here I am. You know, I beat you once. I can beat you again. So I definitely think we'll see Bayley arrive organically, but my other three divas that I would love to see, I think Alexa Bliss, strangely enough, top of the list for me and who I think belongs on the main roster.
Interesting. Where does Asuka fall on that list for you? Obviously, she's going to be a guaranteed call up at some point.
Oh, yeah. But I think you were right with what you said. Like, do we need to keep guys like Samoa Joe or Austin Aries or Shinsuke Nakamura? Nakamura, he beats Finn Balor. He is the face of NXT. A week right. later after beating him, do you take him off of NXT television? Do you bring him up? I think it's a nice notion. But in what world does it make any sense? Whenever we have this guy you've just beaten, if you beat Finn, you have overtaken him. You are the face of NXT. Samoa Joe might be your champion, but we know Finn is the face.
Right.
I think you have to leave these guys on for a little while. I think you have to keep Shinsuke more working on his promos. Obviously, his in-ring psychology is just unparalleled. Nobody on the main roster touches him in terms of charisma or in-ring psychology. But I think that there are things of his that need to be worked on specifically. Whereas you could obviously bring up a guy like Samoa Joe, or you could bring up a guy like Audrey. They've competed in front of, American audiences for years. They understand the logistics behind it. But does it make sense to bring them up? Like you said, I think you were right on that point, that keeping these guys down there keeps the profile of NXT high, but at the same time, it doesn't, I want a rock raid. I don't want scorched earth. That's what I'm worried about. Hey, let's take Austin. Let's take Shinsuke. Let's take Samoa Joe. Let's take Nia Jax. Let's take Austin. Let's take Finn Balor. And after a few, maybe 4 or 5 months, the stage will be set for the next crop of superstars. You might see Ty Dillinger. You might see several other superstars who are very popular ascend. You'll see the Revival continue being one of the best tag teams out there. You'll see plenty of people, be able to carry the torch, but it'll take time. And that's one thing NXT's always been good at is, when they took away Neville from us, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens were there to sort of fit the bill. Then when we took away Kevin Owens, we had Finn Balor ready to become the NXT champion. And after X amount of months, Samoa Joe had already been there. We know Joe. We know Austin Aries. We know these guys. They're ready to take the helm now and become the main players in NXT. If they do this roster rate, if they suck the well dry, we know Finn's going. Finn is already on his way. I get that. It's fine. But I don't know who else they actually could take. I think American Alpha is great.
Yeah. What about Bobby Roode? He hasn't been in NXT very long.
Yeah. I mean, Bobby Roode and Eric Young, James Storm, those guys, they haven't made a mark in NXT, but obviously we all know who they are. We're talking cream of the crop from TNA, guys that can wrestle across the planet and pack 80,000 person stadiums and get a reaction. They draw, and I think that's very important. So I would not be surprised if you saw Eric Young pop up on SmackDown or Bobby Roode or maybe even Beer Money. James Storm and Bobby Roode, bring those guys up. I think that there's going to be a vacuum. And I think that if you fill it with guys like that that aren't considered franchise players in NXT, but are still considered, tremendous assets in a wrestling ring. I mean, look at AJ Styles. AJ Styles did not have to go through NXT. He was brought straight up. He went from Japan, boom.
To the Rumble.
Right over to Rumble. And this is a guy that there was a report earlier this week that basically whenever they brought AJ Styles over, Vince McMahon was like, great. He'll probably pad the mid-card. He's a little bit older, but hey, this is what we'll do. He heard the reaction that he got at Rumble, and apparently there was like a freak out, and it was like, get creative on this now. Get the people on merch on this now. We accidentally have something that we didn't expect. And did we as fans expect it? Yeah, but we're emotional. We're fans. Whenever we hear AJ Styles is coming, what is the first thing we think, Danny? Oh, man. Dude, this is it.
Yeah. Well, they don't call him the phenomenal one for no reason, that's for sure.
But they don't see that. They see, 38 years old, 12 years in TNA. Who is this guy, really? Like, what, big fish, small pond, or... But whenever he came, the thing that WWE might be slightly behind the eight ball on, and I think they're getting much, much better at it now. this is like probably going back like a couple of years. I'm making this complaint, but they do not They did not respect the power of the internet. I can go on YouTube and I can type in Shinsuke Nakamura, you know, Intercontinental title match, AJ Styles, and I can watch a 40-minute masterpiece. And that to me is like, oh, that's a driving factor. That blows my mind. So I can see now the internet has sort of brought wrestling fans. It's a long way from tape trading, Dan. It's a long way from when we were kids. And
That's for damn sure.
I'm waiting to see, you know, the latest ECW pay-per-view because I couldn't get it. And I'm waiting to see, you know, Jushin Thunder Liger on there and all these awesome Japanese talents brought over that Paul Heyman got. And it took like 3 months and I finally get to see it. And nowadays I'm just like, I want to see, you know, if I want to see, the Puma Kid or anybody. I want to watch Lucha Underground. I want to know who Moose is from Ring of Honor. Like, I want to know who these guys are. And I just type it in. There it is. Right there.
It's funny, because to me, it always seemed like the WWE used the internet when it was convenient for them. My example would be with China. The sole reason why she is not in the Hall of Fame, and it's been stated many times by people within WWE, is if you use the internet and search her name, what will you find?
Right.
Okay, yep. Well, you know what? You know, the same thing can be said for anything. If I Google search Triple H and Katie Vick, what am I going to find? If I Google search,
I think
Kenny Omega,
like,
what am I going to find?
What happened with China, though, is a little bit deeper in the fact that she was in adult-themed movies that were making, you know, caricatures of John Cena and Randy Orton as well. So it's not just China. It's the whole image that she was portraying, I guess. But, yeah, that's tough. But, you know, it's just nowadays, like, you can see, you know, there was a big international news, Kota Ibushi is going to be in the Cruiserweight Championship, the Cruiserweight Classic. And when you look at who the heck is this guy, and you go on to YouTube and you type it in, and you're like, oh man, this is awesome wrestling. So when Shinsuke Nakamura comes out on an NXT takeover and the audience is losing their mind that they're exploding, it's not because they think they're supposed to be cheering super loudly, it's because they've actually watched this guy now. And they understand how good he is and what a big deal him coming to NXT and WWE is. So it sort of creates this interesting dynamic of, you know, do guys like Bobby Roode and James Storm, yeah, they might be a little bit older. But, hey, the Dudleys are a little bit older, and they're in there helping get talent over. What do they bring to the table? Do they need to spend that time in NXT? So from the male talent, from that perspective, I have absolutely no clue who they're going to bring up. I know Finn is the easy answer, but, I mean, are they going to bring up a guy like Ty Dillinger? I mean, he's obviously probably the best hand in NXT, but is that somebody who comes up? I mean, what are they going to do with him? Are they going to flounder around the lower card for a while, or who else do they really have? I could see American Alpha being a very easy bring up. They're already ready. They're a tremendous tag team, excellent chemistry, fans super, super receptive to them. But then I think to myself, like, who else is there really? Like, once you get into the logistics, who are you going to take away that isn't going to hurt the NXT product, not only as a touring product, but as a viable entity on the WWE network that makes people feel like they have to own the network in order to watch NXT?
Right. It's almost like they need to they almost need to bring in bigger guys from other companies to fill in those roles, kind of like how they revolutionized this NXT. I mean, look at the guys that we're talking about. They all had an established name elsewhere prior to being brought into NXT. So now that they're going to get called up, they need to, what they really need to do is follow the same formula, because that has been proven to work.
I just don't know what they can do. You know, like it's baffling to me. And usually I like to pride myself on kind of having like a good feeling about what's going to happen. But when I hear numbers like 12 to 14, and I look at the NXT roster, it's good. It's a solid roster. But if you bring in like three or four older guys, and you still need to bring up 9 to 10 NXT talents, I mean, it's like you're cutting off your nose to spite your face at that point. There's just
right.
It's not deep where you draw the reservoir and then fill up rapidly. I think you're looking at like a 4 to 5 month turnaround on the product regaining that prestige in that elite level of competition. So I do believe you have to leave guys like Samoa Joe and Austin Aries and Shinsuke Nakamura. You have to leave those guys there for a while until you can bring them up and their stars ready to take their place.
Yeah, I mean, they need to – they essentially need these guys to do what they've failed to do in WWE for many, many years, and that's use their top guys to build up other top guys or bring other guys up to the top. I mean, how long have we – not just you and I, but every wrestling fan has said that for so long. Like, when Rock and Austin and – retired and Triple H went down to part-time and Undertaker went to part-time, you're like, who in the heck was left? Like, at that time they had CM Punk, who was still getting his feet wet. He was still wet behind his ears as far as trying to get established within the WWE. I mean, and just look at it, like, it was such a struggle period at that time, and I'm afraid of that happening to NXT.
I don't disagree. I mean, yeah, when you look at like, you know, like around 2000 and I guess like 2005, 2006, when the product started to sort of hit that, it was good, but it wasn't great. And, you know, your top guys, you know, you look at your John Cena's and your Bradshaw's and your Randy Orton's and whatnot. It felt like, to an extent, they were sort of just shuffling the title between Orton and Cena. And CM Punk, like you said, he's sort of coming up through ECW a little bit before he really started to make a splash a few years later. And there was a lot of empty space. And the product was very difficult to watch. I mean, I remember there was a time period where I just stopped watching wrestling. Like, it was like I could watch wrestling on a Monday, or I could go do something else, and I always chose something else, because it was watching John Cena and Randy Orton bounce things off of each other. It was like it was watching DX try to reunite, but it was just Shawn Michaels and Triple H, and it was a Shawn Michaels who you can kind of tell was near the end of his career, and a Triple H who, like you said, has transitioned more into that part time, and the tag team wrestling wasn't there at all. It was very blasé. The Intercontinental title was not really anything. Neither was the U.S. title. Nothing was exciting about it. It was by the books. I didn't feel anything. And I mean, that was the only thing, you know, bright spots in that time. You can look at guys like Edge who did relatively well. You know, one of your favorite guys. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there was not a lot going on that was really driving the product. And that is what worries me, like you just said, when it comes to NXT. If they do decide, okay, we're going to leave Joe, he's the champion, that's fine. Shinsuke Nakamura is going to beat Finn Balor. Okay, that's fine. We'll leave him too. He can challenge Samoa Joe. Loser is probably the one that gets moved up to the main roster. But hey, nobody's super attached to Austin Aries yet. Let's bring him up now. Hey, Ty Dillinger, he's a good guy. Let's bring him up too now. Let's take these three or four divas. Let's bring them up too now. And then it's just, hey, American Alpha, we're going to bring them up now too. Hey, who's going to challenge the Revival? We don't know. We'll figure it out. The Artists of Pain seem kind of cool, and they got Precious Paul Ellering. Like, well, maybe we'll have two, you know, we'll have those guys move up into that role. then all of a sudden you've got like it almost feels like you'll have that the next generation appeal. Like WWE lost a lot of those big names. They lost Hogan, they lost Savage, and they lost Luger. Eventually they'd lose Hart. A lot of those guys, you know, even the smaller times that you like the innocuous things. Mean Gene Okerlund goes over there, Bobby Heenan goes over to WCW. Now you're stuck with, okay, well, we need to start making new stars. So who are we going to hitch our buggy to? Okay, Shawn Michaels. Okay, that's one guy we got. Now, then what are we going to do? Okay, well, we lost Diesel and we lost Razor Ramon. So what are we going to do with that? All right, I guess our Intercontinental Champion is going to be Jeff Jarrett. Who? Okay, yeah, sure, Jeff Jarrett. He's big in NWA and the Jarrett name is something. You know, then what are we going to do with our tag team division? Oh, well, the Smoking Guns aren't together anymore. Who's going to be our tag team champions? I don't know. Put the 1-2-3 kid together with somebody random. Oh, let's bring in this guy, Ahmed Johnson. What if he doesn't pan out? He has to pan out. We're in trouble if he doesn't. You know, and it just goes from there where you're looking at, like, a very shallow talent pool where it was a while before the product itself got traction again, where you could finally say, like, okay, this kid, Rocky Maivia, he's coming up. He goes by The Rock now. He's in The Nation. Okay, that's kind of cool. And, you know, Rockabilly and Road Dogg, they've got good chemistry. They're kind of doing all right together. Let's put them in the tag team and see where they go, because that's who they were. Road Dogg Jesse James and the Rockabilly Billy Gunn. And, it's funny when you talk about it like this, like, who the hell's Rockabilly? But that's who Billy Gunn was. And before they pushed Chainsaw Charlie, you know, Terry Funk and Cactus Jack off of the stage and when they were in a dumpster, people had no clue who these guys were. No clue. So it took a little while. If you go back and you go on the WWE Network and you start dialing through In Your Houses in 1996, you're going to be like, who's Brackett? Like, who are these people? Like, who's Ahmed Johnson? None of these people panned out. Like, it's 95% failure rate and 5% rising to the top. And it's because they didn't have anybody there to put butts in seats. They didn't have anybody to carry the torch other than your Shawn Michaels and your Bret Harts, your Owen Harts. But, you know, famously, like, is that what part of the beginning of the Monday Night Wars was? They didn't have the star power to compete with WCW. So if you're telling me, like, yeah, we're going to bring these 9 NXT superstars up and, hey, we'll just see what happens, then you're creating a vacuum for the next X amount of months before we can finally say, all right, NXT is right back to where it was before. You know, it's been on an upward trajectory for so long. I would hate to get back because the talent pool just got sucked dry by the expansion draft.
Yep. And it's scary just thinking about it. Like,
interesting, you know.
I don't mean it's scary like I'm nervous. It's scary. It's like it's an intriguing kind of scary.
Right.
Think about these guys. Like, I'll use Nakamura as an example. Let's say they do call him up. Let's say he's like a number 2 draft pick or something, right? What happens if, and God forbid, you know this just as well as I do, the WWE crowd is different than the NXT crowd.
Yep.
What if he doesn't pan out as far as relating to the WWE crowd? Like, that, like, things like that, like, when I think about them, like, it really bothers me, because you have this great talent, and it seems to me like the fans in WWE are so into putting themselves over that so many of these guys get pushed by the wayside because they just don't care. And we saw that with the crowd tonight in Tampa. We see a lot of lightning fans in that crowd. Yep.
No Stanley Cup championship for you. Womp womp. That's why you didn't win, because you couldn't carry your team through. But no, I do. I agree with you, man. And it's scary. It's exciting. It's intriguing. It's, how are they going to do this draft? Are they going to do it like how they were doing it before, where it's like roulette, like, it randoms out a superstar. John Cena gets drafted to SmackDown, and then by the end of the show, he's back on Raw. Something ridiculous like that. Or is it going to be that, or is it going to be... Because, I mean, to me, that was like the death knell of the draft. That was the last year they did it, right? I think that was
That was the very last draft, yep. You know, and it should have been.
They finger-poked of doing themselves. It was, everybody's watching. They're excited. We got Hulk Hogan versus Nash. This is going to be – this is, they've been building this, and then Hogan just touches Nash's chest and pins him and wins. And, oh, they're back together again. That's great. But that's what that did. People were like, oh, my God, they just put Cena on SmackDown. Okay, great. Now SmackDown is actually interesting. Like, I want to watch this because the number one guy in the company, he might not be number one in our hearts, but, hey, you can't argue with the fact that then – he was the number one guy in the company. You're like, oh, God, I have to watch this now. Like, now SmackDown is a real thing. Who's going to take his place on Raw? Like, who's going to be the number one guy on their flagship show? What does this mean?
Right.
And then by the end of it, they just were like, they poked you in the chest. And that was it. And you were like, oh, you got me. Okay, great. Like, you see the last draft pick for Raw. And you're like, well, maybe it could be somebody big. Don't know, and this is going to be like this huge awesome thing, and they were like, oh, it's John Cena, and we were like, oh, great, okay, cool, like, how fun. guess John Cena's still on Raw, huh? All right, cool. Guess SmackDown didn't get anything, huh? Yeah. Guess it's still not worth watching anymore, huh? Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Never mind. I guess we'll just keep going back to doing what we're doing a minute ago. It's like, are they going to do that? Are they going to random it, or is there going to be an episode like a couple weeks of Raw where you're fighting for draft picks? We've got, you know, a representative from, like, and that's why I hope they decide who the GM is ahead of time. So, you know, if it is going to be Stephanie McMahon, that, you know, Vince can say, Stephanie, you're picking somebody, Shane, you're picking somebody, the winner, whoever you choose, and then whoever wins is going to get the first draft pick for their respective brand. Something like that. I would love to see them, you know, or this match, like how they were doing before. This match is worth two draft picks. And it creates like a sense of urgency. Now you're excited about who's going to win or who could potentially take home two draft picks or who could take three or who gets the first, who gets the last. I mean, I really would like to see them turn this into an actual storyline, because right now all we've been getting – or backstage things where Kane or Teddy Long or People Power himself say, well, I want to be the GM of SmackDown. Well, I also want to be the GM of SmackDown. They're not turning this into a must-see spectacle. They're turning this into, like, a bunch of comedy vignettes in the back. And it's coming off very lackluster to me so far.
Mm-hmm. You're right. 100% right. So I do, you know, WWE has been, they've been known for that for the last few years, doing the comedy shtick, and I'm okay with that. But then there's got to be, like you said, there's got to be a sense of urgency at this point. Like build it up. They could be doing these matches with stipulations now.
That's
they really
why
could.
I think that they should have already picked their GM. The GMs should have already been ready to go. We should already know who they are. Here we go. Like, I would love to see something like this happen, where we know who the GM is. You're fighting for draft picks at this point. You're picking a different RK. If you do well this week, you know, I might be drafting you over to SmackDown. You might, you know, we're going to need a new champion over there. You know, create the storyline with it. You know, go up to Kevin Owens. Owens, if you beat so-and-so tonight, you know, and I'm the GM of SmackDown, who do you think I'm going to want to put in as my number one contender for the belt? You know, if you win me this draft pick, something like that. So now we're looking at it like we've got weeks of build, and then when this draft actually happens, this live draft actually happens, everything's coming to fruition. Oh, on the, you know, the June 27th episode of Raw, Kevin Owens beat Sami Zayn and earned SmackDown 2 draft picks. We use those draft picks right now, SmackDown. Who do you choose? Oh, we're going to choose Kevin Owens and so-and-so. Audience is losing it. Oh, this match did mean something. I had to watch every week. Do it on SmackDown, too. Like, have these matches on SmackDown.
Absolutely.
Pick qualifying match. I don't know. I just don't feel like this is being handled properly. I don't feel any sense of urgency leading up to this draft. I just hear every week, oh, Stephanie's not here. Oh, Shane's not here. Oh, Stephanie's not here. Oh, Shane's not here. Oh, I want to be the GM. I also want to be GM. I mean, this is supposed to be the launching pad for the next generation, the new era in WWE. Why are we not treating it like it is? Why are we not treating live SmackDown on Tuesday Like, it's the most important thing that I need to watch in my week next to Monday Night Raw. Like, without it, I'm going to miss out on everything important to what I, you know, to as a wrestling fan. I want the trifecta. I want Monday Night Raw. I want live SmackDown. I want NXT. I want my pay-per-view on Sunday. I want four nights in a row of ridiculous wrestling. I want to feel intoxicated by how much wrestling that I'm watching and loving. My church needs to be on, you know, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Those are when I have to rest. Like, that's when I need to, like, gather my bearings. And I just feel like they're treating it like it's another cute little gimmick and not like, this is it, guys. This is what you've been waiting for years. We're about to spin everything. We're about to turn the whole world topsy-turvy. And right now I'm just in here, like, I feel like I'm walking into, like, to see, like, the new Star Wars movie, and I'm getting episode one, like, Jar Jar Binks everywhere. Here we go. There's the Gungans. Misa, really wish we had a good draft build-up.
Jesus.
I'm not asking for too much.
Those are great analogies.
I hope you folks are okay with it, but this is my rant for the day. We're going to talk about Raw in a second, because it was a damn good Raw. But still, like, I'm left very lacking in the excitement for the draft department, because this could be something we're building. This could be a week ago, 2 weeks ago, we picked our GMs. Now they're struggling for who's going to be their next draft pick. They're trying to use their sphere of influence. You know, there's a fatal three-way for the title. What if we make it a four-way for the title? If you do this for me, I mean, conniving, all these interesting things that we're just leaving on the table. And it's like, it's going to happen, and John Cena's going to go to SmackDown, or Randy Orton's going to be the return, and he's going to go to SmackDown, and it's going to be like a big thing. There's not going to be any lead-up to it. It's going to be all souped-up car with no engine. And that is my rant for the evening. I hope you have all enjoyed it. Please feel free to download
it thoroughly
on iTunes and subscribe to us on YouTube and click like on Facebook. Check out our Twitter. All of it's at Midcard All Stars Radio.
Yeah. Direct hate mail, whatever you want. As long as you guys are involved, we're good.
I don't know.
I hope they wouldn't.
I mean, I do know what I want. And I do know what fans deserve, at least from a fan's perspective. I know what I would love to see. And it's my experience is not a normal experience. It's not shared. Not everybody's out there angry about this or upset about this. A lot of people are super excited for the draft. I am too. I'm going to be there watching it on Tuesday, the 19th of July. But a part of me,
and we'll
just
be live.
Like, we will be. But when you're a fan for this many years and you've been watching it for over 25 years and you know what their capabilities are, you know what WWE is capable of doing. This is no longer 1994. Where it's being shot in front of, you know, 800 people in the stadium. I know what they're capable of. And I know that WWE could put on the biggest event of the year. This could be bigger than WrestleMania or Money in the Bank. They want to reboot their product and say, this is it. Welcome to the new generation, the next era, whatever you want to call it. And we could get that, but they haven't pulled the trigger on it yet. And it's just, that is what is really killing me, because I know they can do something like this, but better. All right, I'm done. Let's talk about Raw.
Let's do it.
I'm not even mad. That's why I'm glad we're 90 minutes though. We can talk.
That's why we're here.
Listening. This is great. We're all about numbers. Get those sweet sponsorships. But good opening segment tonight on Raw. We had Seth Rollins come out, and he addressed, you know, I'm not a good elephant, I'm not a bad elephant, I'm the elephant in the room. And that's Roman Reigns in his suspension. And they didn't go and say, oh, you know, it was drugs or this or that. They still haven't told us what it is yet. We don't know if it was like a supplement that he just wasn't supposed to have, or maybe, you know, he is Samoan, maybe he smoked a little grass. We don't know. But Seth Rollins is just the man to tell us what's going on and make fun of the fact that Roman Reigns had been suspended and just kind of brought it to light. which is a bull in WWE. I can't remember very many times where they brought a wellness violation to the forefront of a story.
No, I cannot remember either. And maybe that's part of the punishment.
Remember your hawk falling off the Titantron, I think, is the last time that I can remember.
Jesus.
Here's your punishment, hawk. You're going to fall off and make everybody think you're dead.
I'm wondering if that is part of the punishment.
Could be. I mean, I think that this is the genesis of Roman Reigns as a heel. He will come back. He will be unrepentant. He will... this is a great, like, the silver lining on this is that you can easily reboot Roman Reigns for this now. You can very easily have him come back and say, I don't care about the fans. You know, you guys drove me to this. I was making myself miserable. I was self-medicating because all of the hard work and effort I put into being a role model and being, I know, I'm a little teapot with my daughter and showing people that it's okay to be, you know, a badass, but at the same time still be, you know, respectful and sensitive. And he can come out there and he can tear the audience apart and say, you're all miserable. You made me do this. You drove me to this. Now we have to deal with, and it'll finally be what everybody wants it to be. Like, that's swagger, Roman Reigns, evil, beating down faces, violently attacking Dean Ambrose. This is a blessing in disguise for him. Because it gets him off TV, it gets him out of lines as Mr. Suffer and Succotash, and we finally can get the Roman Reigns that we've wanted for years.
One thing I noticed, I thought it was actually kind of funny, when Seth showed Roman's tweet, the crowd booed the tweet out of the...
Yep. I'm sorry, and I love you guys, and I feel like I've disrespected all my fans, and the fans are like, shut up, stupid. We don't even like you. Glad you're gone. Hey, goodbye. But the thing that I like in this is this opening segment set up the entire show. Because Seth Rollins now wants it to be just a one-on-one match against Dean Ambrose for his WWE Championship, to which, surprisingly, AJ Styles' music plays. And I'm like, what is this happening? And AJ Styles comes out and he lays claim. Oh, yeah, he lays claim to that third. I beat John Cena at the last pay-per-view in that rematch. Why don't you put me in this match? And that, of course, prompts the leader of the C Nation to come out. He just, you know, before I was injured, who beat you, Dean? You know, I did in the last title match. Referring to the U.S. title. And they're setting the stage for this. So Stephanie McMahon wisely makes matches saying, Dean, if you can be, you know, if you're going to put you in a match with AJ Styles, AJ, if you win, you're in the match. And John Cena, if you beat Seth, you're in the match. So now we have up to a fatal five-way for the WWE Championship. You've got two sick, nasty matches. Seth Rollins versus John Cena, and you've got AJ Styles versus Dean Ambrose. This right out of the gate, I was like, let's do this. Like, I'm ready to rumble.
Oh, for sure, and I'm intrigued when they announced that. Okay, this is going to be great. Like, I absolutely love the fact that there's five people in there, and assuming that Roman Reigns is not going to win, based off of the suspension, any one of those four other guys in there is a legitimate. Yeah, you could win. Sure, I'm okay with Ambrose retaining. I would be okay with AJ winning. I'd even be okay with John Cena winning. But that's the best part about that is, man, they announced that and I was like, okay, like this is cool. When was the last time we saw a match for the title with this many different big names in it? Like the old championship scramble matches, which, you know, those were kind of a cluster. But I mean, that was the only time we got stuff like that. I mean, we used to get, you know, like the Armageddon Hell in the Cell, the six man Hell in the Cell, and things like that. But yeah, we don't get that stuff very often anymore.
You know, if he wins, if Reigns wins the match, but he does it as a heel, I am okay with it. Like, I am actively not angry if he wins. But he does it as he, if he you know, spears somebody, hits somebody with a belt, goes ballistic, I'm not even angry. I'm cool with it, actually. So this match had a lot of very interesting elements to it. Most of all, to me, AJ Styles and John Cena, of course, because it kind of takes your mind off of Roman Reigns. And if neither of them get in the match, it sets up something for them to do at Battleground, another matchup between John Cena and AJ Styles. So I think that there's a lot interesting going on with this opening segment. And it definitely paved the way for the entire card of the evening. So afterwards, we move away from that, which was a very hot segment. And we move into a Divas match. We got Paige and Sasha versus Charlotte and Dana Brooke. And this was a little bit of Sasha's reemergence. I'm not going to say her coming out party, but she's been off TV for quite a while. And her return last week was very welcome whenever she broke up the beatdown that was occurring on Paige from Dana and Charlotte. So this matchup occurs, and Sasha just takes it over from top to bottom.
She did. I would like you to tell the folks what you text me during that match. So we can chat about that for a moment.
Oh man, I have to look at what I said. I don't remember what I said. Was it bad?
What you said about Miss Charlotte.
Oh, I
because we've been
hate,
talking. We've
Charlotte.
Been talking about this.
I hate Charlotte, but I don't hate Charlotte. I hate that I hate Charlotte. Like, I hate that they booked her into a corner where it's so predictable what she's going to do every week, that she's this freak natural athlete. This was, to me, this is like if you took, you know, Kurt Angle when he first started, or Brock Lesnar when he first started. Instead of Brock Lesnar out there fighting Jeff Hardy and beating The Rock in 6 minutes and winning the championship, what if instead of that we had Brock Lesnar have Paul Heyman grab people's legs or hit them in the back of the head with a, you know, with a title belt, or you know, trip somebody up or throw something in their eyes like Mr. Fuji. Like, what if instead of that we did that with Brock Lesnar? Would he be the beast incarnate? Would he be the one of the most feared WWE superstars in history? Or would he have just been another, like, would he have been Nathan Jones? Like a really awesome-looking big guy, but with no substance behind him and kind of quickly forgotten? I think that that's what they've done with Charlotte. They've basically said, hey, here's this freak athlete. Hey, she's genetically superior. Hey, let's even make her one of our tap-out models. She was the first woman to represent tap-out for WWE. Let's do that. All that. She is this gifted superstar. She's picked up wrestling faster than anybody on the planet. Very quickly ascends to the WWE Women's Championship, BTW. She has to win every single matchup for 6 months by either her dad or Dana Brooke causing interference. Oh, okay. So maybe she isn't genetically superior. Maybe she isn't a freak athlete. And that doesn't make me angry, because we've seen heels like this before. It's fine. I get it, yo. It's no big deal. Like, it, you're a heel. That's how you're supposed to win a lot of the time. But don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Don't give me this ridiculous talent who we know is capable of tearing the house down, and have her every single match have to have somebody interfere on her behalf.
Right.
I mean, I'm okay with a heel like Brock Lesnar, who is actually just physically dominant, who's psychotically dominant. It makes me hate them more, because nobody you put in their way can beat them. It made it so when Brock Lesnar lost, it was cathartic. You were like, oh my God, he finally lost. Because who's ever going to beat that guy? And
right.
That's what I thought they were going to do with her. Whenever she first came aboard, I'm like, she's going to elevate this entire division, because what are you going to do, put a Bella in there with Charlotte and tell me a Bella can beat Charlotte? I don't care if Charlotte is a heel, if she's out there, you know, crushing everybody week to week to week. I don't care. She can go out there and cut all these promos about how she's gifted and perfect and genetically superior and, the ultra diva, an unstoppable force in the women's division. Yeah, hell yeah, do that. But don't every single week have Dana Brooke grab somebody's leg or trip them or hit them on the outside or get Charlotte disqualified. And it's like, it's just so old and played out. And I hate the fact that I hate Charlotte right now. That's it. That's my second one. If you think, folks, be sure to follow us on Midcard All-Stars.
Right.
Be sure to download us on iTunes every week. And check us out on Twitter and Facebook. In case I'm losing any viewers as we're going, they're probably like, wow, he's angry today. He's mad.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about this for weeks.
Take it off Charlotte. Put the belt on Sasha. The fans want. They're dying for Sasha. She gets pops like a woman does not get pops. And it is so refreshing.
Except tonight. Nobody got pops tonight.
Nobody got pops. But for all intents and purposes, Sasha got the biggest pop of the women for the evening. But that's, you know.
Right.
It's just the fans are worn out. They're beaten down from this. You told us we were going to get a revolution, and we got firecrackers. You know, we're supposed to get this awesome this APOC in the women's division, this overwhelming, incredible revolution, and all we got was nothing, and it stinks, I guess.
Right.
Womp womp. That's my complaint for the women's division. But I feel like Sasha winning the belt, then the draft occurring, and going somewhere else with it kind of breaks these things up a little bit. You bring up Carly, you bring up Bailey, you bring up Nia Jax, hopefully bring up Alexa Bliss, and now you're saying, okay, you've got this blood infusion. The Bellas are kind of gone now. In fact, you know, Nikki might never wrestle again. You know, knock on wood, hopefully she's back. Bree is retired. We don't really have much else going. Let's start this over again. Like, we can still say we're doing a revolution. But with these new women coming in, it creates hopefully a whole new dynamic that just continues to reinvigorate the product, because I don't think that this is the revolution that we were promised.
No, and I don't know why the ball was dropped. It seemed like the women's matches were getting good reactions. They were putting on solid matches. And I think part of the problem was and we can go back to our shows at the time. Every single week, it was the same six-woman tag.
Mm-hmm.
Every single week, it was Team Bad versus Team PCB. And then one random week, it'd be like, oh, you know, Team Bella. But it was always the same six-man tag. And you're like, yo, like, let these people, like, that's fine. Keep them in groups. That's fine. Let them do one-on-one matches and regular tag matches. So it doesn't always have to be a six-man tag.
Right. Build them as individual stars and not as a giant group.
Right. And I feel, in my opinion, they didn't do that.
Nope.
I mean, you had Paige was the most over one on the roster at the time.
And they did nothing with
her. Absolutely nothing with her.
They dropped the Divas Revolution on her. And that's fine, because she still is a cornerstone of it. She still was a product of NXT.
Mm-hmm.
And so she could have been the headliner of this new thing. But instead of that, they just kind of were like, okay, we're sharp. We get wanting to push a new superstar. That's fine. But doing it at the expense of somebody who's already extremely popular, I don't think was the wisest move.
No.
Took a lot of excitement out of it for me.
That's one way to put it. But yeah, I'm with you on it. It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. Poor women's division. How about Big Titus tonight? How do I get out of this?
You know, I like this feud between Rusev and Titus, because it's an all-out brawl every time they get in. They get close to each other, and I'm fine with it.
I'm coming along to it now. You know, a couple weeks ago, whenever Titus got the opportunity, I was of the camp like, what the heck is going on here? Why is Titus getting this opportunity? It makes no sense to me. He loses the match, and, you know, both you and I were like, okay, he loses, like, surprise. He loses the match we expected him to lose, but comes out the next night, especially after Rusev had, and I think he cut one of the more delightful promos I've ever seen in my life, where he's like, you're a loser, your dad's a loser, happy Father's Day! Just throws
it
in the air.
Woo!
Happy Father's Day, everybody! But, you know, and I guess that was a great way of awakening the sleeping Titus. In Latin, you know, he comes out the next night, last week on Raw, just decimates Rusev, just destroys him. And you're like, you know, okay, well, where was this a couple weeks ago when we were building this feud? Why were we having Titus on, you know, the announce team? Oh, well, Rusev's a great competitor, and he's a heck of a U.S. champion, but I'm going to – no, now we got Titus going out there, and he's just destroying Rusev. Titus is a freakishly large man, and he goes out there and just decimates Rusev, and then this week we finally get them in a match. And what happens? Rusev has to roll out of the ring because Titus is just bringing the aggression, and they're out for a minute outside the ring, and Titus hurls him over the guardrail and walks back in the ring, and he wins by disqualification. He beat Rusev so badly, Rusev couldn't get up. Like, what is happening now? I agree with you. Like, a couple weeks ago, I was like, this is the most useless thing I've ever seen them do with the U.S. Championship, and now I'm looking at it, and I'm like, all right. Like, we've got a guy who is a physical gargantuan finally throwing his weight around, and he's beating down the U.S. champion.
Right. And I'm fine with it. I liked it because Rusev, after having such a long time of nothing, even if he comes out of this feud with Titus going over at the end, they're both getting better. This feud is going to elevate both of them if they keep letting them go back and forth and scratch and claw in each one of their matches. And I love it.
I agree. I'm hoping it means bigger things for both of these guys. But I'm definitely invested in seeing where this goes with Titus O'Neil. Because, again, like I said before, he does my favorite finishing move. It's called the Sky High, not the Clash of the Titus. And it's awesome.
I love the Sky High.
I love it, too. It's not the Clash of the Titus. It's the Sky High. Thank you, D'Lo Brown.
Do you think Draws likes that? Never mind. Too soon.
Ooh, hey. Thank you for listening to our radio show. We're Mid-Card All-Stars. You can check us out on Twitter. I don't think that was the move that did it to Draws, though. I don't think. Let's use the old Google. How was Draws paralyzed? All right, let's see. During a match. Let's see here. All right. Oh, I think there's a video of it. Hold on. How Draws got injured.
That's almost like watching that Sid video where he jumps off the top rope with the big boot and you're like, oh, God, no.
Oh, I can't listen to it because I'm here with you. Womp, womp, womp. Well, I guess we'll just have to figure it out later.
We can tweet out what we find, guys.
When D'Lo Brown went for his signature running powerbomb, he was not able to gain the proper grip on Draws because Draws wore a loose shirt. He's wearing a t-shirt. He was unable, okay. And while Draws was unable to execute a proper jump to aid in the lifting for the powerbomb. So it was not, I do not believe it was the Sky High that did it.
That was the only running powerbomb D'Lo Brown did, though.
It's not a powerbomb.
I think it was the Sky High.
But the Sky High is not a powerbomb.
To somebody who's writing an article that might not know the proper terminology.
Okay, hold on. I'm looking. Okay, the Sky High sit-down spine buster, sit-out spine buster. The real deal running sit-out powerbomb. Thank you for playing, Danny, the internet. Don't lie. So afterwards,
the internet does lie. We didn't talk about what the internet was lying about.
I just wonder, for those of you that are listening or that are listening to us via podcast, I hope you're okay after witnessing Sasha Banks and her bank statement. It was reported that the move was banned on WWE television officially because it invoked imagery of Chris Benoit's cripple or crossface. A WWE insider testified to the fact that the bank statement was no longer going to be used going forward, and that her backstabber move would forever be known as the bank statement. I just want to check in for your mental health purposes to make sure that our listeners are okay, because Lord knows the dirt sheets are always right, and that Sasha Banks in her cripple or crossface should not have been on TV tonight. So I just want to make sure everybody's all right. You guys okay? Okay, is that a yes? All right, I think they're okay.
They sound good to me.
All right. Sorry, guys and gals. I forgot for a minute. I was that freaked out by it. It must have blindsided me, and I just, you know, everything in my mind shut down. But let's talk about John Cena versus Seth Rollins, because this, if John Cena wins this match, he qualifies for the Battleground Fatal 3-Way, or Triple Threat, or whatever we're calling it, Fatal 4-Way, potential Fatal 5-Way. But this was a good match, and again, people hate John Cena, and they whine about him, and they complain about him, but man, this guy has been going to work before he was injured, now that he's back from injury. Him and Seth Rollins put on a, you know, I would say just about under a pay-per-view level match before John Cena is unfortunately, air quotes, blindsided by members of the club, and Seth Rollins is able to get the victory.
I honestly would have liked to see John Cena win.
I would have loved to see both these guys win and make it a 5-way. I would have loved it.
Yeah, exactly. And then from there, you can have Anderson and Gallows interfere and have AJ win. Why not?
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Does that hurt Dean at all?
No.
Let's say this happens. Now, but Dean's cool because Dean is okay because the club interferes, right? It's not a clean loss.
I mean, I like them sort of taking it to the level of not 50-50 booking their champion anymore. I mean, when you look at the statistic, the 2015 statistic of amount of times that Seth Rollins was on TV versus times that he lost, it was like, I think that they said it was something like he was 8-12 on Raw and SmackDown. Like he had lost 12 matches clean. These weren't like DQs. It was like 12 clean losses to guys like John Cena and Dean Ambrose. So it's in Roman Reigns. So you're looking at a champion like who literally lost way more than he ever won.
Right.
So I do like them having this happen. I kind of expected it, though. Once you see the club run in and keep John Cena from winning this match, you almost certainly know that AJ Styles will not be winning his match, though. So, yes, it was a great match, and the setup was very good. And it does set up for AJ Styles and John Cena, the sequel, starring AJ Styles and John Cena. So I'm okay with it because I think these guys are going to put on another awesome match at Battleground. But afterwards, we get something on Raw that we never see anymore. And that was Enzo and Cass against local jobber number one and local jobber number two, which was literally just Big Cass executing a big boot on one of their faces. And then Enzo proceeding to do the Air Enzo, whatever you want to call their finishing move, and get a 1-2-3. It was 2 seconds. And the crowd was doing the wave because Enzo referred to them as the wave of success in his promo. And the crowd did the wave.
If the crowd, if this catches on, I text you, they officially become my favorite, as far as an entertainment standpoint, favorite tag team of all time.
Yep. Social Outcasts came up, but they weren't having it. Social Outcasts were like, oh, no. We're going to be on TV for the first time in two months. We're hard. And you know what? Yeah, I'm now that I'm older than 12, I don't find those jokes funny. But hey, we're still writing that PG-13 material. I'll let it ride.
I'm okay.
Sorry, guys. But Enzo and Cass stand tall when the social outcast attack. Sorry, but I don't think anybody out there can compare to Big Daddy Cool, 7 foot tall Cass's big boot.
No, nobody can.
Dig it. Nobody. So anyhow, sorry. Then we get to move into what was supposed to be a match where Becky Lynch was going to wrestle with Natty on commentary. And instead of wrestling, Becky Lynch was like, oh, that's the girl that attacked me. Guess what? I'm a swing on her. And the coolest part about this entire thing was that they were asking Natty, you know, why'd you do it? Why'd you turn on Becky? And the nostalgia was so powerful when she said, you know what, Michael, enough is enough and it's time for a change.
Loved it. Loved it.
I was like, oh, for those of you not familiar, that was one of Owen Hart's catchphrases when he was a heel, was enough is enough and it's time for a change. And that was a nice poignant moment. And it sounds stupid in like innocuous and like, why are you guys focusing on that? But it was cool because that is like, that is Natty basically coming out and saying like, I'm a bad guy now. I'm a heel. She invoked her late uncle Owen and then proceeded to be attacked by the face Becky Lynch. And I like the little feud these two ladies have got brewing because they're both excellent workers in the ring and, you know, nothing but good things going. So I am excited for their inevitable match at Battleground. Maybe Becky will win a match. I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? The last kicker gets her last kick more than she kicked last, but we're hoping.
Poor girl.
Hey, she's awesome. I love Becky Lynch. I'm super high on her. But the next segment was Talk is Jericho between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And this was, and I'm almost certain of this, I think this was Sami Zayn's best promo of his career.
It was a hell of a good promo. Usually Sami doesn't get the time to speak that way. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's usually, I mean, his promos are usually short, sweet, and to the point. But this time he was able to elaborate, and we were all the beneficiaries of it.
Yep. But it was excellent. He basically just went at Kevin Owens, said, you know, I was your best man at your wedding. We moved up together. I loved you. You were family to me. We both worked our entire careers to get to WWE. And when I got up here before you did, it created, you know, this vacuum of anger and hatred and malice that you have for me. And it was basically this, it was the, like an amalgamation of every Sami Zayn promo cut against Kevin Owens that you've seen. It was touching on all the points. We came up together, you know, we were like brothers, all this. Kevin Owens finally turns the tables on Sami and he goes, Sami, this was never personal for me. This was you never being able to understand that my success that I needed to achieve, just because it happened at your expense, didn't mean that I hated you or that I didn't right. respect you or that I didn't care about you. He said, you could just never handle the fact that when I won the NXT title, it came at your expense.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an awesome way, you know, little twist to put on it, was that Kevin Owens basically said, I was always a better friend to you than you were to me. And that really made me think, like, Sami was just not able to handle Kevin's success because it came at him being beaten for the NXT championship. So excellent promo work by both men. They said that Battleground will be the end of their feud. And it makes sense in a way because the brand split's going to happen. They might not be on the same program. It's hard to feud with somebody when they're not on the same show as you. But one of the more poignant moments in this is when Chris Jericho is basically in Sami Zayn's face and telling him like he makes him sick and Kevin's right. And even though I can't stand Kevin, you know, he's gonna give you the business at Battleground. And then he does his, you know, soak it all in, you know, Jericho-holic, soak it in. You know, I'm giving you the gift of Jericho. And a sidekick from Kevin Owens and a haluva kick at the same time from Sami Zayn kind of show that both of these men are on the same page and that they are ready to bury that hatchet once and for all at Battleground. So I don't know if we're going to see them tagging or friends or friendly or something like that, but it was an interesting moment for these two. So interesting to see where it goes. What I was not interested in was the next segment, The Miz returning from a month-long absence of filming The Marine 5. Returns and basically berates Stephanie McMahon, says, where's my red carpet? Where's my star entrance? And Stephanie, you know, tells him, well, you know, your star-studded return will be tonight. You will wrestle in a match for your Intercontinental Championship against a surprise opponent. Turns out the surprise opponent was Kane. Yep. Surprise opponent was Kane. Maurice just, I don't know, I think she just sat down and then she said her ankle was hurt and then The Miz carried her out and then she acted like she was kidding and that her ankle didn't really hurt and that was the segment.
It was total waste. Like, I
thought Finn Balor was going to come out. I thought they were like, oh, this is how we bring Finn. Like, I thought Finn was going to come out and challenge him and beat him. But no, we got the big red machine. 20 years later, after
the Demon Kane. Why is he the Demon Kane now?
I don't know.
Why can't he just be Kane?
I don't know.
Why do they have to change his names?
I don't know. This segment was really bad, though.
Rusev's first name He's gone.
This was the worst segment of the night by the widest possible margin. Not even remotely close, but it was awful. It was atrocious. Really bad.
Agreed.
So then we move in, because we got to kill time. We've got Cesaro over in Apollo Crews tag teaming against Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio. Sheamus and Apollo Crews, who I will now be referring to as the King of Strong Smile, they've got this little feud going on. Alberto and Sheamus have a corner case feud going on. They were members of the League of Nations together. Now they're not. They didn't end the group on good terms. So this matchup is just basically Sheamus working against Del Rio, Del Rio working against Sheamus. Meanwhile, still trying to win up a match against Cesaro and Apollo Crews. And the King of Strong Smile is able to execute a spinning sit-out powerbomb on Sheamus off the distraction to get the 1-2-3. Del Rio hits Sheamus with that enziguri, and that's the match. King of Strong Smile wins.
Yay.
Feels good. So afterwards, we're segueing into a big one. We've got the New Day comes out, and they're dressed. This is such in the vein of DX. They're dressed just like the Wyatt family, and you've got Kofi Kingston wearing like the garbage man suit, wearing the sheet mask, the Eric Rowan, and then you've got Big E trying to be the part of, I guess, Bray, wearing overalls with a big, like a corn cob pipe and the hat and a big gray Santa Claus beard, and then Xavier Woods dressed like Luke Harper with the sweat stains on the t-shirt. But something's funny about it, because Kofi's running them down and Big E's running them down, and Xavier Woods just looks out of place and terrified.
I'm not sure if they're going to elaborate on that or not. So
he looks like he's scared of the Wyatt family. Wyatt's come out and they cut a promo, and New Day tries to retort, but Bray Wyatt just buries them with, the power positivity doesn't work for the man who just got fired from his job and can't feed his starving children. Like, your lifestyle is a lie. You're lying to these people. And Xavier Woods looks very uncomfortable, and Bray Wyatt picks this instantly, and he looks at him and he goes, I can tell that you're not believing what they're saying. You're not feeling this power positivity. And he you can trust me. You can talk to me if you want, Xavier. Like, I'm here for you. And Xavier Woods and the New Day, they go to the back after this segment's over, and the New Day is still trying to rip Wyatt, and Xavier just shakes his head and he just walks away. And we've never seen this. This isn't, I wouldn't call it dissent amongst the New Day, but it is an excellent play on the scenario that Xavier Woods, maybe Bray Wyatt is in his head. And this group is built on fun and laughter and ha-has and making fun of people and time machines and cute stuff like that. Maybe Bray Wyatt finally has gotten into one of their heads. And now, instead of the numbers game, which they always have the edge on, and it's how they've retained their titles for so long, maybe now it's being neutralized and it's setting up something for the Wyatts to possibly take these belts off. We've been so concerned with, hey, is it going to be Gallows and Anderson, or is it going to be the Vaudevillains, or is it going to be Enzo and Cass to take these belts? We were so concerned with that we never thought for a minute, what if it's somebody else? And what if at Battleground it's the Wyatts that do it?
Yeah, didn't think about that.
Gotta be scared.
I'm okay with it. I think that's another too little too late kind of thing, but I'm for it.
So in our main event, to finish up our show, Fanatics, we get the big one. We get Dean Ambrose versus AJ Styles. This is, again, another, if you're an indie fan, this is a dream match. We're getting the very important Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles. We've always wanted it. Now we're getting it. And these guys put on a hell of a match. I loved it. This match told a story. You've got the absolute desperation from AJ Styles. He wants to win this match. If he does, it becomes that fatal four-way. There was a little scene backstage where he's talking to the club. What are they saying? Are they going to be keeping John Cena at bay? Are they going to make it so AJ Styles is able to wrestle Dean Ambrose one-on-one? Are they going to interfere? and ensure that AJ Styles gets the nod? What if one of them hits AJ Styles and AJ wins via DQ? Does that mean he gets into the match? Lots of interesting little things are at play here. Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles put on a very good matchup that ends with John Cena coming down, distracting AJ Styles just by his sheer fighting with the club, and kind of a cool little, you know, move to end everything where Ambrose is able to hit Dirty Deeds on AJ, get the 1-2-3, and the club just takes out all their frustrations on John Cena. And Seth Rollins, sensing a week, yeah, by the way, 3 weeks in a row, four events total in the last 3 weeks that John Cena has gotten his sushi kick by the club to end a show or to end a segment. And sensing weakness with Ambrose, he gets jumped from behind by Seth Rollins, who pedigrees him not once but twice, and then stands tall holding that belt. So interesting set of circumstances. We've got the club standing tall over Cena. We've got Rollins standing tall over Ambrose. It is still going to be just a three-way. And they're really sowing the seeds for the matches that we're to expect at Battleground. Overall, Danny, give me your impression. How did you feel that this Raw measured up?
I thought the Raw was very good. A lot of the feuds are starting to take a little more shape now. We're getting matches announced for Battleground. We have some that are in the works that we are assuming are going to take place at Battleground. And I think they're doing a very good job for the most part of building towards this, what do we call it now? A special?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if we can call it pay-per-view anymore.
I think we got to call it pay-per-view. It's always got to be all pay-per-view. Right, sure. But yeah, I think they're doing a very, very good job so far. And, it's another Raw where they continue to put the right guys in the ring against each other.
I agree. All right. To end the show tonight, you get to pick one superstar to return for the brand extension. Who's the guy you're picking?
Who am I
putting
going
you on the
to
spot pick? Here?
You know who I would like to see would be. Can it be anybody, like an old guy? Or does he have to be a
anybody.
Current wrestler?
You can pick. I mean, you can't be like, I want Bruiser Brody to come back from the dead.
Oh, right. But and somebody that would be full-time, I would like to see Jeff Hardy come back.
Ooh. Think he'll have, you think he's got it together?
I think he's got it together. I think WWE needs him to get it together as well. Personally,
That's a good one. You know, I was thinking about this earlier, while I'm asking the question, and I'm like, you know, who would I love to see come back? And there's a couple on my radar that I would really love to see back. Like, I would like to see, like, Trish Stratus, for example. She's made hints that she would love to come back to wrestling. I think that would be insane if they brought back Trish Stratus for like a 6 month run. In the Divas Division, we need somebody to beat Charlotte. She could sort of reset the division on her own if she was right. to come back. So my brain says somebody like that would just be awesome. But my heart tells me that I like would absolutely love it if they brought back John Morrison. I loved John Morrison. He's doing outrageously good work over in Lucha Underground. I think yes, that all of the issues that he had before with his difficulty on the mic and everything, he's sort of rectified all that. And I think that John Morrison would be ideal. You know, when I hear that they want to bring back guys like MVP and Stevie Richards, like, I'm cool with that. Like, I would love to see them bring back Shelton Benjamin. I think that that's a no-brainer to fill that mid-card area. You know, needing somebody for certain aspects, but I don't know. But all I know is you folks will be hearing it soon because we'll be talking about it. So as always, thanks for listening and stay fanatic.